Ice cold beer!
Popcorn, peanuts, Cracker Jack.
I know what the big deal about Cracker Jack is. Did you ever go and buy a pack of Cracker Jack thinking you'd get a prize and find no prize in the box?
Today, I consider myself the luckiest man on the face of the earth.
To the ball game, take me out to the crowd, buy me some peanuts and Cracker Jacks. I don't care if I ever get back. We'll root for the home team. If they don't win, it's a shame. 1, 2, 3 strikes you out at the old ball game.
All right, welcome back to the Bench Jockeys here on 101.5 UMFM. I'm Michael Elves, joined in the dugout by my pal Brian Svensson.
Hey, hi, howdy.
And no bullpen phone tonight. Chris Zook, we are taping this on a Thursday night. He is unavailable, won't be answering that bullpen. So fingers crossed we can get through this game without... We're relying on our starter. We're going to... No pitch counts are off.
Pulling a Jack Morris here.
Pulling a Jack Morris, exactly.
Who is worse than Dave Steep, by the way. Just to keep that bit going.
This is a lingering bit. You're going to just keep it going here.
You're right. Absolutely.
You know what? Neither Jack Morris nor Dave Steep are a Gerangela Cinche. I don't know if you heard about this guy.
I have not.
So this is a pitching prospect who was at the draft combine. And okay. This happened at Petco. Featuring high schoolers on Wednesday. He is a switch pitcher.
Oh, I did see that. The glove is different than, this isn't the first switch pitcher we've had, right? Pat Vendetti was a switch pitcher, but the glove is different.
The glove is different. And also he was up into the high 90s.
Which Vendetti never was.
So worked with a 94 to 96 mile per hour fastball and a 79 to 80 mile per hour breaking ball from the right side. And he clipped 93 with a 75 to 76 breaker on the left.
That's impressive.
Yeah. So I mean, this instantly made this guy I'm very curious as to hopefully he has good control and can kind of develop this, because it would be fascinating to see someone come into the game and the matchup possibilities of a switch pitcher facing a switch hitter.
So this actually got resolved a number of years ago when Pat Vendetti did it. I can't remember exactly.
Oh, was there a rule put in place because of Vendetti?
Yep.
Okay.
There was an at bat.
It's so rare that it happens that I couldn't even remember that.
Yeah, so it's the Pat Vendetti rule. And hang on, I've got this here. I do. The Pat Vendetti rule. Currently, it's OBR 5.07F, now known as the Pat Vendetti rule, reads, a pitcher must indicate visually to the umpire in chief, the batter, and any runners the hand with which he intends to pitch, which may be done by wearing his glove on the other hand while touching the pitcher's rubber. The pitcher is not permitted to pitch with the other hand until the batter is retired. The batter becomes a runner. The inning ends. The batter is substituted for by a pinch hitter, or the pitcher incurs an injury. In the event a pitcher switches pitching hands during an at-bat because he suffered an injury, the pitcher may not, for the remainder of the game, pitch with the hand from which he has switched, the injured one. The pitcher shall not be given the opportunity to throw any preparatory pitches after switching pitching hands. Any change of pitching hands must be indicated clearly to the umpire-in-chief.
Well, there you go. The Pat
because,
Vendetti rule.
Because, yeah, there was an at-bat a number of years ago where it was Pat Vendetti was up there as a switch pitcher. And he was up against Pablo Sandoval.
They
kept switching back and forth. Yeah.
So, okay, I mean, part of my ignorance is I may be blanking on whether the rule is, can a batter switch
in? Yeah, so it basically the pitcher tells the umpire. So basically what in the at-bat that caused the rule, they just kept switching back and forth. Vendetti would change his handedness to get the platoon advantage. And then the batter would go all the way back to the dugout and grab his other bucket.
Right.
And then stand on the opposite side. And then Vendetti would switch his hands. And before he could do that, the batter would call time. And this went on for, according to the story, I remember the sped up video was like 8 minutes.
Was it,
but I think
was
it ended
it
up
set
going
to
on,
the Keystone Cops music? Or
I think, no.
Or Benny Hill?
I think it ended up going at like 15 minutes before they figured out what the heck to do.
Mm.
And yeah, so they ended up putting in this rule. And so now the pitcher indicates and then the batter gets to choose. So the batter gets the advantage.
Okay. So they do. So there's no like blind declaring or something. This isn't.
No, the pitcher shows to the umpire what side they wish to pitch with. And then the batter, because there's no rule against it, the batter can then switch.
Which is interesting because you would think that you like limiting one. In terms of competitiveness, if they're both capable of doing the thing,
I understand why the rule exists. It just kind of does feel like a weird thing,
right? Like it's like, oh, we've, yeah.
I think a blind thing would be almost better, right? Have a rule that's like the batter can't, once the batter has stepped into a batter's box, they can't change which side that they're hitting from for the same reasons, injury, whatever, right?
Yeah.
And that seems like it would make the most sense. And then, you know, they, you know, say ahead of time during the game that like, if this situation, all the switch hitters in a game in which this switch pitcher exists have to tell the ump, okay, if the switch pitcher comes, this is their, like before the game on the card list, who, this is the way that they're hitting. And then the pitcher has to pick before they can see with the batter. I don't know. There's a million different ways to solve it. That one seems like it is tilted in the batter's favor.
Right. And that's what I'm curious about is like, you know, if it's a, like that unlevels the playing field in a situation where like the other person is capable of evening it back up. But
yeah,
it's curious. It certainly, it leads to a like whether if your Angelo Cinche comes up, whether we'll see some sort of application of this again and how it'll be.
It's in the rule book, so I imagine. Yeah. I imagine, yes.
Well, I mean, speaking of the rule book, next week, a number of potential rules changes are going to be sent to the new Joint Competition Committee. I was reading, I guess it was Mark Feinsand on MLB.com earlier today, the pitch clock, of course, being one of the very big ones that they're going to be looking at because they've been experimenting with it in the minors. Games have been reduced by 29 minutes on average.
Huge.
In the early months of the 2022 season. That is a gigantic change. This is, of course, the pitch clock gives the pitchers in the minors 14 seconds between pitches with nobody on base, and it increases to 18 seconds or 19 in AAA with runners on. Those numbers, as quoted by Mark Feinsand, Rob Manfred said those numbers would be a subject to discussion with the committee, but they are encouraged by the results in the minor leagues. And for, I think this is something that both the player side and the MLB side probably are in favor of.
I think the pitchers hate it, but they also, you know, only make up half of the
membership, right? Yeah.
Right. Yeah.
Or is even, well, yeah, I guess it's half basically.
And not even all pitchers have to hate it in order to, you know, even if some of them are like, yeah, this is cool, then like it just completely, you know, a union that doesn't stand together, yada yada, right?
Right.
So yeah, it's interesting.
Yeah, and I mean, if you are thinking about like keeping people's attention and attracting fans,
oh, it's brilliant.
This is certainly something you can point to, like that. Like, there's no clock on the game itself, right? Like if if a game's tied, it just, we play extra innings till it's not no longer tied and stuff. But
right, and the number of batters on base extends the game and all that stuff. Reasonable
like limitations on how much time you can, like, because you're not playing at that point.
No, I mean, they're just kind of, I mean, the argument that a lot of pitchers are making is that it's impossible to hold runners. But I mean, my sympathies do not lie with them in this instance. More stealing, more base runners is good. Stealing is exciting. Base running is exciting. Yeah. So like if the sacrifice to get, you know, if the set quote unquote sacrifice to get pitchers to not be as boring and pitch faster is that we also simultaneously get more stolen bases, I'm kind of okay with it.
Right. So base size, defensive positioning, and automatic ball strike zone also apparently on the docket for this joint competition committee, which came about as part of the new CBA. What I hadn't realized, though, is that the composition of this committee, it's four active players, six members appointed by MLB, and one umpire.
I wonder who the one umpire is.
I mean, regardless of who the umpire is, like, you're... The balance is definitely in favor of MLB. So whatever rule changes they want,
they're going to put through.
They're going to put through, right? Because even with one, like even if the ump side with
the union
players,
got hosed again. Big surprise.
Yeah, I was surprised that it was like I guess maybe seen when we first talked about the CBA getting signed and agreed upon back in the spring. I mean, we knew about the committee, but I don't think we saw like the mechanics of like how this committee was structured. And I just assumed it would be like a 50-50.
You'd think so.
Because it was a deal between the MLBPA and the league.
You'd think so, but apparently the players union got hosed again. So
yeah.
Awesome. That being said, I'm not disappointed with the proposed rule changes. I think they're pretty okay.
Right. And the challenge system, which is being used in single A, for a pitcher, catcher, or batter to challenge a ball or strike call. And each team receives three such appeals per game.
Oh,
if it's a successful challenge is retained by the team. This strikes me as like the NFL challenges
yeah.
that the coaches have.
Yeah. You know my opinion on video replay. I think the game's better off without it.
I think this is the like soft introduction of the like automatic balls and strikes, because I really think that there is still some deep resistance to the automatic balls and strikes.
Yeah, I think there is as well. But I don't know, man. It feels like more video replay is such a bad idea. All it's going to do is slow the game up. They're making, you know, if the pitch clock is going to make the game progress faster and we're happy about that, then why in the world would we be excited about something that's going to decrease the pace of play, especially in the later innings?
The stops. Yeah. I mean, if they have to use them judiciously and they've used them up or something, it does. I do wonder about kind of how it'd be enacted. I haven't really seen any details about how it's gone in the single A application, but I mean no one's really covering.
Yeah, and I'm just straight up hesitant and or resistant to you know, expansion of replay in general, just because like they get just as many things wrong even with replays, so like what's the point? You know, all it does is slow things up. But
yeah, the other thing coming out of the owners meeting that was in the Mark Feinstein piece was with respect to the Rays in Tampa Bay and the Athletics in Oakland, and the both teams search for a new ballpark deal. I gotta say, I mean, Rob Manfred continues to do himself no favors when quoted, and even you know, talking to MLB.com, which is ostensibly like the Pravda of the league office, you know, talking about California political processes are their own sort of animal.
Is he the worst commissioner we've ever seen?
You know, I mean, I have like no love lost for Bud Selig, as we all know, for folks who listen to this show. But Rob Manfred is like really doing his best to
I just want to
make me wish for Bud.
Yeah. I mean, like, I just want to point this out. Like, at least Bud Selig seemed to legitimately enjoy the game of baseball. Say what you will about him in a lot of other ways, and there are a lot of things mm-hmm. to say about him in a lot of other ways.
But he loved the game, yeah.
It seemed like he legitimately cared about the game of baseball, you know? And you know, the other commissioners, right? Rob Manfred has been awful, has overseen two really messy labor disputes in baseball after there had been an insane amount of quote unquote labor peace. Right. Mm-hmm. And compare that to the other sports commissioners. Gary Bettman's overseen three work stoppages and the most amount of club relocations, team relocations out of any of the sports in the past 20 years. Roger Goodell has seen multiple scandals.
Ongoing
permanently.
As we record this, Deshaun Watson's continues to have a contract with the Cleveland Browns.
And, you know, David Stern being David Stern. And yet here we are saying, like, potentially debating about, at least in the modern era, whether or not Manfred's the worst. And it's not just like legitimately dismissed out of hand. That to me is stunning.
Some strong work by the young up and comer.
It's just the peak levels in such a tiny amount of time.
Yeah. Yeah. Really, really coming into his own. He is quoted as saying the Athletics have prudently continued to pursue the Las Vegas alternative as the league likes Las Vegas as a market.
Huh. Well, I mean, so. I like Vegas as a market too, so I can't really blame him.
I mean, admittedly, the Athletics have relocated more than once in the franchise history, but I do feel bad for the citizens of Oakland who.
I do too. They've had really terrible ownership that has just, you know, since they last won the World Series, spent less and less and less and less money in the face of inflation. And this year, literally less money even without inflation.
Speaking of ownership, MLB owners approved the sale of a minority stake of the Cleveland Guardians organization to David Blitzer. This was confirmed in the media today. Zach Meisel of The Athletic, Bob Nightingale of USA Today, amongst those. And
then, you were just killing these transitions, eh?
John Heyman of the New York Post as well. Thank you very much. I appreciate that. So according to The Athletic, Blitzer will own somewhere between 25 to 30% of the team initially. He will have the option to acquire a majority stake 6 years from now.
If it means that the Guardians can actually get some money spent on that team and not lose their star players constantly because they're unwilling to spend, then that's great.
Oh my gosh. So yeah, those are the Dolan family who've owned the franchise since 1999. This year, opened the season with a payroll of $68.2 million. That was the fourth lowest, ahead of only the Orioles, the A's, and the Pirates, who are all like
various modes of
criminally
rebuilding.
Bad tanking teams.
Yeah, and along with some of the cheapest owners. I mean, it's a proper company. Owners.
Exactly. So really just awful. Blitzer probably unlikely to have, you know, opened the purse strings just yet since he's a minority stakeholder.
Yeah, but once
I would
he's
imagine
a majority owner, it'll help.
Right. Know? And he was previously his partner, Josh Harris, and him had previously tried to get in on the sale of the Mets that eventually went to Steve Cohen.
Yeah.
He has stakes in the Blitzer, not Harris, has stakes in the 76ers and the New Jersey Devils in the NHL as well.
Cool. Well, so,
I mean, in line with other owners in terms of, you know, multiple, I mean, like Reinsdorf, you know, having Bulls and White Sox, though, like multiple sport stake ownership. But yeah, maybe, I mean, because the Dolans, I mean, we've lambasted them for their spending practices, for, you know, trading away some good players before they become expensive players, and
so
also
many.
For dragging their heels on changing the name for
I mean, it's kind of stunning money wise right? Because like relative James Dolan, owner of the New York Knicks, kind of spends money like water on that team.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Like, he's a meddling manager or owner, right? Owner, and he's really bad, but say what you will about
him. But he spends money. Cohen level floodgates that he opens up.
That's exactly it, right? Like, you know, he's willing to spend the money on multiple coaches and the most expensive coaches and Phil Jackson and, you know, if it's any, you know, willing to spend the money to get the superstars, like legitimately does not care, just wants to have a winning product, is bad at putting said winning product on the court, but cares, which is like the exact opposite of the Dolans that own the Cleveland Guardians. Stunning.
Right. And if you're a fan of the franchise, like you at least have to respect that the guy's trying.
That's right. Huh. Whereas you might be frustrated with a lot of the things he does, like banning Charles Oakley from the Garden, but you know, you'd have to at least admire the fact that he's putting the effort in. And I think that's what a lot of fans want, right? Like you want to see your team or your ownership put the money in as if they actually care about the franchise.
Right.
Not just the money that comes out of it.
No, I mean, not the ones. Unfortunately, there's far too many of those owners and it shows in terms of, you know,
that's right.
Some of their attitudes and their actions. I don't have as quite as fine a transition to our next thing, but earlier today, I saw a piece, Defector posted an article by Laura Wagner called Under New York Times Ownership, The Athletic Lays Down No Politics Rule for Staff. You and I both follow Tipping Pitches. They retweeted this this article. Did you get a chance to read the Defector article itself or just the...
I did. Yeah. It's stunningly embarrassing that a company, an organization such as The Athletic thinks that sports and politics aren't intertwined and always have been, you know, they always have been. Even we just came away from a weekend in which the players of the Tampa Bay Rays decided they didn't want to wear human rights articles of clothing because they thought it was political, or religious as well.
Right.
You know, and this is a league that has military nights and flyovers and sings the national anthem before every single game. Like sports are political. They are. They always have been.
There's a new golf. There's like a whole new thing, like Live Golf. I don't know if you've been paying any attention to this thing, but the competition for the PGA is fully funded by the Saudis.
Oh, I mean, I'm a fan of soccer. I get that all the time, right?
There's like inherent politics, and
of course, like,
I mean, it's inescapable.
Yep.
Like everything is political ultimately.
All the time, always, without fail.
And, you know, we were just talking about Oakland and the, like, you know, the battle between city council and the ownership of Oakland Athletics over funding for a new stadium. That's a political thing, but it's a baseball story. It's a sports story.
Yeah, absolutely.
Like the limitation on how the Athletic would cover that are you covering it simply as a financial story? Well, if it's a financial story, if it's coming out of public money, it's a political story.
Yeah, that's right. It's so silly. It's so, so, so silly. And I don't understand how they can possibly get away with doing something like that. I'm planning on canceling my subscription.
It's very disappointing because like The Athletic has had some really good, like, thought leader type writers for them.
Yeah.
Who've pushed against some of like kind of the, you know, I mean, written about the way that calling out broadcasters who use the coded language about playing baseball the right way, who,
yep,
you know, call out some of the bozo behaviors of like some of the players on the field who clearly vote one way because of how they behave around other players. It's
sad. And, it's very disappointing. And I can't imagine it's not journalism.
No. No, the notion of like objectivity, honestly,
it's not journalism.
you're not being objective in covering sports. Like, it's the like, oh, stick to sports of what like people say to athletes. And it's as like wrongheaded and disingenuous in those circumstances as it is to say to a journalist, only cover the what happens on the field.
I mean, especially like, who is an expert in politics anyways? I mean, if that's limited entirely to people who went and got poli-sci degrees from a university, that's an incredibly small pool, and mostly not the MFers on social media who are the ones that are saying stick to sports.
Mm-hmm.
Like, what is nobody allowed to talk about politics anymore then? Period. That sounds like a really bad idea. That sounds like a really bad idea.
And acknowledging,
yeah,
that like politics touches every aspect.
Everything is driven by politics, because politics is literally when boiled down to it, it's just deciding about how to run our everyday lives.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So right? That was a deeply discouraging thing to read. Pretty bummed, because we have, obviously both of us have subscribed to The Athletic in the past and quoted Athletic articles on this show.
It was one of the most important publications for me for a very long time. Yeah.
Yeah. So bummed about that.
Very.
Less bummed. And I know you're less bummed about the man you want to tip your cap to.
Yeah. So Liam Hendricks, it is Pride Month right now. And in face of what the Rays did, he put out a statement, I guess, or it was an interview where he was basically like, my biggest criteria about where I went was whether or not the team had Pride Night. Which is,
yeah,
really,
so this was
really
an
cool.
interview with The Athletic, the aforementioned Athletic, which,
yeah.
I mean, admittedly, like, this is coming on the heels of the Rays thing. Like, this is ostensibly some political coverage.
I know that you and I both believe that being allowed to be oneself is not political, but
in the States right now,
yes, it's unfortunately,
it could be argued that maybe even talking to Liam Hendricks about this is somehow politically divisive.
Which is ridiculous. Asinine.
And you
so
and I both
silly.
Absolutely acknowledge that, like, this shouldn't be political. It's been politicized.
It's human rights. That's it. It's human rights.
But yeah, Hendricks, free agent, specifically ruled out teams that didn't want to do it. Both of us independently saw this piece, and both of us independently came to the recording saying we wanted to tip our cap to him. So multiple tap kips to Liam Hendricks.
He's a heck of a player, you know. Not only is he a heck of a player, but he seems like he's a heck of a person, and that's more important to me.
Yeah. Yeah. Ultimately, I mean, after he hangs up his hat and his cleats, it's who he is as a person who
that's right.
Will linger. Sadly, the White Sox moving up in the old AL Central standings. They're on a 3-game win streak, but still with a negative run differential. I was looking at the stats earlier today. The Padres, though.
Yeah, we love
the first time
dads.
They are first in the NL West alone since 2010.
That's a long time ago.
12 years
That's
ago.
That's a long time ago. Jeepers. I mean, who was even on the 2010 Padres? Do you remember?
Oh, boy. So, what? It was Agon, the, like...
Yeah.
He was, like...
Agon was playing first base.
He was, like, the marquee guy for them at that point. 2010 roster. Boy, let's see here. And this is on Baseball Almanac. We got, oh, Heath Bell, of course.
Yep.
So
also on that team, David Eckstein.
Oh, man.
Miguel Tejada.
Everth Cabrera.
Chase Headley. Scott Harrison. Tony Gwynn, but not the one you're thinking
of. No, the other one. Junior. Will Venable. And
Jerry Hairston. Nick Hundley. Ryan Lundwick,
welcome
Matt Stairs.
Welcome to Brian and Michael name some guys.
just a whole bunch of guys.
Holy.
And I mean, their pitching was like,
oh, Matt Lantos.
Guys you recognize, but like guys you're like, okay, sure, I guess. Like
pretty sure John I had a fantasy Garland? Team called Latos Intolerant at that point.
Oh, that's amazing. That's incredible. But like, who are these guys, man? Luke Gregerson? Like they're guy names I recognize, but it's all those ones where you're like,
oh, Gregerson was a reliever. I remember. He actually, I think he ended up maybe pitching for the Royals at one point, but yeah.
I think you're probably right. He still plays, I think. No. Padres, Oakland Athletics, Houston Astros, St. Louis Cardinals. I remember him on the cards. Okay. But man, let me tell you, like, how did this team end up in first for any period of time?
Mm-hmm.
They finished second in 20 games over 500. How? I don't understand, man.
Different times, man.
Holy cow.
But yeah, a little bit of a hat tip to the Padres for standing alone for the first time in 12 years. Maybe pour one out for a couple of pitchers this week, Miles Michaelis and Tyler Anderson, who both had no-nos broken up really late in the game. Anderson's came, I guess it was his first battery faced in the ninth. Or no, one out in the ninth. So his second battery faced.
Yeah, one out in the ninth. Gave one up to Shohei right?
Ohtani.
And then
Michaelis was the last.
Two outs, yeah.
Yeah.
That was the Dave Steve special.
The last out of the game. So, feel bad for those guys chasing those no-nos that, they took it deep into the game. Thankfully, Chris Zook did not text either of us, so we cannot attribute
He's so proud of himself that he didn't jinx it. He's so proud. I mean, it's still broken up anyways, but he's real pumped that he wasn't the reason.
He was like, guys, I didn't do it. It wasn't
He does have those powers. I don't care what he says. He absolutely has those powers. I've seen it.
And also a hat tip to Luis Garcia and Phil Maton, who had side-by-side immaculate innings, right? Against the same three batters on the Rangers.
I mean, the moral of the story is that the Rangers suck.
The Rangers suck. That's what I'm taking away from this. They are. What are they right now? Well, they're only 9 games behind Houston. They're second in the division.
That's disturbing.
But they have a run differential of exactly zero.
I hate the Rangers. I hate them. I hate them so much.
Yeah, I mean, you got to remember, they're playing in the same division as the Athletics, who have decided, rather than championing Moneyball, they're playing no Moneyball.
oh no, Mike. Oh no.
You're here for that one?
Oh, they've got less than 7,000 average fans, man.
Yeah, it's a tough 7, time. Let's pour one out for our friend Connor Milligan, who's an Athletics fan. Listen to his show.
Dagwood Radio!
Dagwood from 6 to 8. Give the guy some love, because clearly his baseball team is not doing it for him.
Yeah, poor guy. You got anything else you want to talk about today, Mike?
I got nothing else. I think we should talk quickly about the pity party and then...
I'm coming in to do it tomorrow.
All right. Live in the studio, 1 to 3 p.m. this afternoon then.
Yeah. Definitely going to be some death cap for Cutie. Going to be some tall boys. Not the drink, but the band.
Sure, yeah.
Some weaker thans. And whatever I'm feeling in the mood for. But
bring,
those
bringing
three bands
that energy.
Sure. Yeah.
Right on. Well, with that, neither of us are going to shout play ball. But we wish you all a great long weekend. Or I guess it's not a long weekend. It's Father's Day weekend, though. So
Father's Day weekend. So take your dads out to a baseball game. Tell them you love them. And thank them for having a catch with you.
There you go.
Also, don't forget all the great moms out there, too, because, they're all really fantastic as well.
Strike 3, you're out.